the Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. After retiring from his position as senior paleontologist at the Natural History Museum in London, award-winning scientist Richard Forty purchased 4 acres of ancient woodland in Oxfordshire, England. His latest book, The Wood for the Trees, One Man's Long View of Nature, is the joyful portrait of what he found there. He spoke with Cincinnati Zoo Director Thane Maynard about the wonders of nature you can find close to home if you just look for them.
Dr. Richard Forty, thanks for joining us all the way from England.
Pleasure to be with you.
You know, it's an honor to have you here. For 20 years, I have very much enjoyed and admired your book called Life, A Natural History of the First 4 Billion Years of Life on Earth. And of course, that was a natural because you're a paleontologist.
Oh, yes. I've spent a long career at the Natural History Museum in London. I worked there for nearly 40 years, and I still go in every week now. So it's my kind of natural home.
Well, and that is a great book. I encourage any listeners to read it. But your new book is an interesting one. It's called The Wood for the Trees, One Man's Long View of Nature. And I've heard it compared to a Sand County Almanac, which is by an American naturalist named Aldo Leopold years ago, and one of the great fathers of American conservation. And this is more of a personal story, I guess, of you and where you now live.
That's absolutely right. I put retired in quotes because a naturalist never retires.
That's right.
But I actually did some television that paid me a bit of money, and that bit of money was just enough to buy a rather wonderful bit of ancient woodland quite near to my home in Henley, which is along the Thames Valley in the south of England. And I just enjoyed the wood for a while, as you do. I felt everybody should have a wood. And then, of course, I started doing natural history and got more curious. And as these things do, the wood gradually turned into a book project. I had one great advantage, of course, that having worked at the Natural History Museum in London for so long, if I didn't know anything, there was always somebody there who could help me out. So things like beetles I'd never studied in my life. Now I know a lot more about beetles than I did when I started, thanks to having help from my friends. So I wanted to build up a picture of ecology at the local level, very local level, and then extrapolate, you know, into a bigger picture from that, because when you understand ecology and how things work at a local level, then you begin to get a vision of how complex and magnificent the workings are at the greater level. So that's why it's a long view of natural history.
Well, you know what's great about that is, of course, many times, perhaps from specials on the BBC or looking at National Geographic magazine, people imagine going to study nature in a far-off place. You know, that might be Antarctica or it might be the Amazon, when in fact, as you've shown, it can be in a woodlot right behind your house.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, if you really investigated it, one rotting log, with all the fungi and insects and microorganisms and so on that are working on it, could be almost a lifetime study. You don't have to go to Amazonia or to, the deep sea to find wonderful natural history. It's there all around if you have eyes to see it.
An interesting thing in your book is you don't just explore current times, but also some of the history of the very land where you live.
Well, that's absolutely right. I was a little naive about human history. When I bought the wood, because I'm not a historian, except at a very deep time, but I soon discovered that, particularly in an anciently occupied land like Britain, that I couldn't disentangle the natural history of the wood without understanding something about the human history of the wood. In fact, in this particular case, our woodland has probably been woodland ever since the Norman Conquest, and probably long before that. It was part of an estate, a single estate, ever since it was granted to the Normans, and it stayed in continuous use as part of that estate for 800 years. So the uses of the wood, and nothing in England, and I'm sure it's true of much of the states, is truly pristine. It's always been used for something. You can't disentangle the human history from the natural history. They're part and parcel of the same thing. And I had great fun, of course, as you can these days, going online and going into document stores and so on to find out about that history, to illuminate the whole.
You know, a thing I've always been impressed with when I visited Britain is even with the long human history and development and agriculture and tens of millions of people, outside of the cities, you still have absolutely beautiful open spaces, and you also have lots of woodlands like the ones you're talking about. And there must be tighter controls on how things look, because I don't see quite as many strip malls as you seem to see on every road in America.
Well, of course, one of the problems is that regardless of what you think about Brexit and all the current political issues, the population of Britain continues to grow, and that puts more pressure on the remaining green spaces. And I passionately believe that that we need to preserve these, not just for ecological services, as it's sometimes called, but because people walking in woodland and real beautiful countryside, it's got a tremendously soothing and beneficial effect on the human psyche. You know, I believe with E.O. Wilson that we are bound to nature, and that too often modern life has kind of split us off from this natural background. So the fact that many of the areas, even around London, like our woodland, have survived for such a long time is a tremendous virtue and something that needs to be protected, in my view.
And as you said, there is great benefit to people, particularly people in cities, that they can have some respite, whether that's even visiting a park right in the city or a little bit further out visiting open land or woodland like you have.
Well, of course, I want people to kind of get down close to the soil, close to the ground, and really inspect and look at things. Because the other part of the modern malaise, I think, is that people have forgotten how to observe. Many people have forgotten how to look closely at things. And when you look closely at things, of course, you discover the wonders, the hidden wonders. Some people seem to regard, some branches of natural history as just sort of naming names, you know, giving names to flowers or insects or whatever. But actually, that's merely a doorway that opens into a wonderful place where understanding is deepened by knowledge. And I'm afraid that many young people have lost this because, you know, there's always a machine to distract them playing a game. But real satisfaction is to be had from looking closely at nature.
Absolutely. Now, in the book, you organized it so it's very readable, sort of month by month, so we get a sense of the seasons. And here we are talking in sort of late fall, early winter. Tell us a bit of what you might experience or are the highlights this time of year on your woodland.
If I just went up today, which I did, and just because the book's finished doesn't mean to say the project's finished, the project continues, you'd see beech leaves, which are we don't have the American fall. It's not so dramatic in the UK. Subtler colours, really. We've got a sort of deep russet orange colour with the remaining beech trees that hang on the trees, and there are maples which here don't turn that deep red that you have, but a kind of rather bright and lovely lemon yellow. So at the moment, light is streaming into the wood because the trees have shed a lot of their leaves, but many still hang on there to give these wonderful colours. And as somebody who's been a passionate mycologist, you know, I'm crawling about looking for fungi on the wood floor, which is something I do every year at this time. But it's going to be cut off just in a few days. The frost will come in, and as far as the fungi are concerned, this is a big gate coming down. There won't be much thereafter, so I'm treating the last few days as rather special time.
Now, you know, when you speak of fungi, it reminds me of a saying that you often hear from biologists, and you may be able to corroborate it, that if you pick up a handful of soil in many parts of the temperate world, there are more species of fungi in there that people don't even know what they are than anyone would be able to imagine.
Yes, I mean, the molecular work, which, of course, it was at the cutting edge, it's now almost routine. You can sequence what's in soil, And you find there are organisms there that you just simply don't know what they are yet, because you haven't found the mushroom or whatever fruit body for that particular fungus. So soil, of course, is itself one of the most ancient ecosystems. I mean, it goes back for several hundred millions of years, and it's been a collaboration between all kinds of organisms. Some you can see only just, like mites, springtails. Others you can't see because they're microscopic. And the fungi processing or being part of the process that recycles nutrients in soil. You know, we know now what we don't know, which is another way of saying we know how fragile it is as well and how easily we could damage it. So I think we're breaking through into a new kind of awareness of the complexity of nature and how we have to understand the processes if we're going to conserve anything of the nutritional value of our soil over the millennia.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for spending some time with us. Your book is terrific, and I appreciate the work you're doing.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to me.
My guest has been Dr. Richard Forty, author of the new book, The Wood for the Trees, One Man's Long View of Nature.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition. The producer was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Elstro was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.